Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I am John Manuel. I got to tell you, Aaron, I love my weekends. Love my weekends with my kids. Had a great day at home yesterday with the children. Two Durham Bulls games this weekend. Good weekend. But Monday mornings, I have none of those Monday morning problems because I have the Top 25 College Podcast. And it's going to be a serious crash in June when the College Podcast is over. And I'm going to miss arguing college baseball with you every Monday and discussing it with our listeners on the Baseball America College Podcast. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. But this is the highlight of the day, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, just the Top 25 poll, that's a fun meeting. But this is just undistilled. We don't have to explain it to other people in the office. College talk at a high level. It's a lot of fun. Hope you enjoy it as much as we do. Aaron, right at the top, let's just get this out of the way. UC Irvine. Talk about a deserving number one. UC Irvine. Kicking butt and taking names. I mean, this is just a really, really great team.
Yeah, I couldn't be impressed more with what they've done and their consistency. To be 14-1 in the Big West.
That's amazing.
Having one series against Fullerton and Pauley. I think they swept Pauley. I know they swept Pauley. They haven't lost a weekend series all year long. I mean, you know, I still wonder down the stretch about the pitching depth. That's the kind of thing that usually catches up with teams at the end.
That's the one bugaboo.
We've seen that with Arizona State the last couple of years.
Great team.
You know, a team that doesn't have a lot of pitchers, but has a couple of very good dominant pitchers. They get fatigued at the end. That could happen with Arizona State again this year. And then that's my one concern with Irvine. But you know what? You know, they've done a pretty good job managing. I mean, I think Daniel Bombona and Christian Bergman, they haven't had a lot of huge, you know, 140-pitch outings. Or really, right. I mean, they've gone 7-8 innings most games. I mean, I think they've been managed well.
You're right. I think they have. Let's face it. The one difference between those two programs, and this is nothing personal against Murph. I don't know if Murph ever listens to this, but one of those head coaches has won a national championship. Mike Gillespie has won a national championship. I think that matters in college athletics. I think we see it matter every year in the college basketball tournament. I think once you win one, boy, it seems like those teams go a lot deeper in the tournament every year. And I think we see that in baseball very frequently. Now, I have my own theory for why USC fell down and caused Mike Gillespie to lose his job there, but he's gone to Irvine and he's shown, kind of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. When it comes to game planning, this guy is as good a game manager as there is in college baseball. And I believe in Irvine, and it's not just because of Coach Gillespie, but that is a separator for me in a lot of ways. And I just think that team, we don't always talk about the number one team, especially if it's chalk, top of a ranking. But, you know, Rice is the only other team I can remember that's been in a big conference or a good conference the last few years and just runs the league. You know, one, two losses like Irvine's doing.
You're right.
And guess what? The last 3 years, Rice has been to Omaha.
Yeah, that's
when
true.
You can dominate a league like that, you host a regional. You almost always host a super regional. And the chances of you getting to Omaha when you do that are so much higher.
And I'm looking forward to heading to that Irvine regional. I'll be out in Orange County to see hopefully the Anteaters and the Titans hosting regionals. So
Aaron Fitt and the OC. We'll see if we can hook you up with Gina Keough. That'd be fun.
I don't know who that is, John.
That's one of the Real Housewives of Orange County. And Shane Keough's mom and the former
ZZ
Top Girl
star, right?
That's exactly right. I think star is unfortunately a loose definition of the word star. There, that's a star, kind of like I have no space thing I could make. I was going to try to make some space reference, but I couldn't think of the name of. Anyway, never mind. Rice is two. Arizona State takes a little tumble, Aaron, down to five as Oregon State wins that series. I guess the big news in the top ten is who's not in it anymore. Or who's not at the top. There's a little shuffling in the Southeastern Conference really this week, Aaron, because most teams in the top 10 won their series. The series in the top 10 that sticks out to me is LSU winning 2 out of 3 at Arkansas. LSU moves up to number 3, and the shuffling we did of SEC teams because Arkansas and Georgia, which have been toward the top of our rankings of SEC teams all year long. In fact, I think those two teams have been 1 and 2 most of the year.
Yeah.
Or 2 and 3, I should say, with LSU, the other team in that mix. Those two teams have both come way down as LSU wins a series at Arkansas and then Georgia gets swept at home by Florida and the Bulldogs have lost 6 straight. Let's talk first about LSU because, Aaron, I don't think we talked about this last weekend as much on the podcast, but maybe we did. But they've remade their lineup and it's a dramatic change and they're playing really well since the change.
Yeah, DJ LeMahieu, Ryan Schimpf weren't getting it done in the middle of the infield.
No, 0-6-4-3 double plays all year.
That was an unbelievable
stat.
And only a couple of 4-6-3s.
I mean, we'll see if that, I don't know if that stat is 100%, but Paul Maneri said it, so we're going to take his word for it.
Yeah. We haven't fact-checked. We should add that. But,
yeah.
But, I mean, you know, LeMahieu, they got him at second base now. They've got an outstanding playmaker at shortstop in Austin Nola, a guy who, coming into this weekend, had not made an error in six games since they made the switch. And, you know, they've gotten a lot more energy with the freshman in lineup, like Nola and like Mikey Mattook.
That's a Jim Callis favorite, by the way.
Absolutely.
Mikey,
I mean, Jim Callis talked this guy up. He was a freakish athlete, the kind of guy that scouts talked about in hushed terms and you know, in dark corners because
That's
of
right.
his ridiculous athleticism.
He was last year's big pop-up guy
yep.
in Louisiana and high school players.
So, I mean, I think the only surprise is that he's produced so early because he was considered pretty raw. But he's been a big energy boost for them, and I think it's a big reason for their success. But, of course, maybe the biggest reason for their success is Lewis Coleman, John.
Yeah, I think
that
right.
guy is
I was headed
a stud.
There. Yeah, and I think the big development for LSU, early in the season, you talk about a pitcher who might get fatigued. Got to keep your eyes on Lewis Coleman because early in the year, he'd give you one or two innings on Friday as a closer, then come back and pitch six or seven on Sunday.
Didn't do that much, though.
Not that often, only a couple times. But the emergence of Ott, is it Matt Ott? Matty Ott,
yep,
the back
Matty
of their
Ott.
Bullpen. The SEC coaches I've talked to for draft coverage have universally said Matty Ott is money.
Yeah.
And with Matty Ott's development as being a closer that LSU can trust, Lewis Coleman doesn't have to do the double duty, and that's just made him so much better. It's made their whole rotation better. Mm-hmm. That was the difference maker for them on the mound.
No question. And Matty Ott, you know, I got to look at him in South Carolina. He reminds me a lot of Lewis Coleman. He's kind of a low arm slot guy, firm stuff, like 88, 91 range. I mean, with a good slider, and he's tough and he's composed. It's like, you know, it took Lewis Coleman a couple of years to get to that point. If you remember, he wasn't so good earlier in his career.
Yeah, you're right.
Matty Ott's there right now, and that's been huge.
Doesn't UC Irvine have a middle reliever named Ott? Might have Ott versus Ott. No. I think Irvine's got a pitcher named Ott. I could be wrong. I was checking a lot of box scores of Irvine lately, and I thought there was an Ott name in there. We still have Ole Miss in our rankings very high. Talking about SEC teams, they're at 7. They're kind of like the hold steady this week. They win a series. They sweep at Auburn, which Auburn can kiss its regional chances goodbye.
Yeah,
I think you know, tough year at Auburn. I do have I do have a lot of respect for Auburn's talent, but that team is not hitting like you thought their talent would and like a John Pawlowski coach team would, considering how offensive they were.
Yeah.
At College of Charleston. It's been a little bit of a surprise. Obviously, it's first year. I think John Pawlowski was a good hire, and I think he'll figure things out at Auburn. But a little surprising how that offense has really tailed off.
I thought Brian Fletcher would be better. I thought Kevin Patterson would be better, and I thought Hunter Morris would be better. I
mean, those
three guys.
Those
they've had great years from Trent Mumme and Joseph Sanders. But the other three guys that I just mentioned were the guys that I thought were going to carry that offense, and they've been disappointing.
Those guys have really been hacktastic. You look at Auburn's strikeout. This team has struck out 416 times in 49 games. They're getting close to 10 strikeouts per game. On average, that means all the team times where they play bad teams, they're still striking out enough. And, I mean, Brian Fletcher's got 67 whiffs. That is hard to believe. And Kevin Patterson, who's now been reduced to a part-time role, 55 strikeouts on 127 at-bats. I mean, I know we're looking at stats and all that, but we could cheat a little bit here on the Baseball America podcast with Aaron Fitt and John Manuel, but geez, that is stunning. It's stunning to see Auburn struggling like that. So big series win for Ole Miss to go on the road and sweep. You got to give them props for that, even though we didn't move them
and
up.
And certainly Ole Miss has to be in the discussion when we're talking about these elite teams. Because
I agree.
I mean, you know, they're right where they were when they started the year. We had them 6 or 7 in the preseason, and they're number 7 now.
Yep.
I mean, maybe they're the number 2 SEC team or number 1 SEC team.
I think they're in that discussion. I would say they'd be the number 1 if Scott Biddle's healthy, but now
you
have this question. Scott Biddle not starting this weekend. I don't know what to make of this guy draft-wise. All I know is every SEC coach that you talk to that's faced Mississippi says it's just unfair that this guy is back in college. Get rid of this guy. Who is this doctor with the Yankees who said he wasn't healthy
right. So
I can flog him for not approving that contract?
Sure.
It's amazing the year this guy's had as a starter, but if he is tender, that's a big, big loss
yeah.
for Ole Miss.
Yeah, no
talk
question.
Talk about a difference maker.
I mean, you know, I'll tell you what. I like him better as a prospect, John, now than I did a year ago.
I agree.
I like him as a starter.
I like him
as a starter because of that changeup. He's still got the cutter.
He's got two-plus pitches to annihilate left-handed hitters with.
Yeah.
It's a great he should have opposite splits as a right-hand pitcher. That, to me, makes him a starter, not a reliever. So, but then the other big news in the SEC, obviously this week, Aaron, was Florida going to Georgia and sweeping that series. Now, I was doing the Bulls game on TV Friday, and Matt LaPorta was still in the minor leagues, and he was playing in that game, and he was the only guy for the Columbus Clippers who didn't have a good game that day. I think he was the only hitless player in the whole lineup as they put 14 runs on the Bulls and hit 4 home runs. Matt LaPorta, I actually gently ribbed Matt LaPorta on the broadcast during the game. And then because Florida was getting run by Georgia 8-1 on Friday. And then I get up Saturday morning and I'm checking the scores, and there was a fly in the ointment. And that was that Florida had rallied to tie that game. 9-9, a suspended game they picked up on Saturday. There were a lot of those around the country on Friday night.
Yeah.
But how did Florida do this, Aaron? How did Florida sweep this series, and how did Georgia lose six in a row when the consensus, I think we both had sensed, was that most people thought Georgia was, if not the best team in the SEC, at the very least the most talented. Mm-hmm. Maybe the issue was they maybe weren't the best because they had some real inexperience there. But happening with these two teams?
You know what strikes me with Georgia is it's the confidence factor. And I got a little whiff of this last week talking with Coach Perno in the SEC teleconference, before the Florida series. You know, he was asked what kind of an advantage it is to have this series at home. And he said something like, well, I don't know if it is an advantage. We've been better on the road. I mean, this team has not protected its home field.
They must protect this house, yet they're not.
Perno sounded worried going into this series. The way things have been going, they had lost some games that they should have won. They got run by Jacksonville State in the midweek.
And you're right.
You could see it building. And Sully, on the other hand, sounded very confident, and he liked the way things were going. They had swept South Carolina. His young guys are really coming on strong. I mean, Preston Tucker's had a huge year for them, and he had a couple of huge hits this weekend.
He's a nice little player.
Very nice
like.
Player.
He's got power. Scrappy little 5'9", 5'10 infielder, but am I mixing him up?
I think you're confusing him with Josh Adams.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
But Preston Tucker's a big first baseman with some power, and he's gotten some big hits for them.
And he's also the guy who's got the left-hand swing that's like tailor-made for the short right field porch at U of F.
Sure.
Which, of course, he didn't have it in Georgia. But, yes, Scott I talked to really liked Preston Tucker as a guy who a couple of years from now could be in the position that Rich Poitras finds himself in as a middle of the first round or back of the first round pick. No, absolutely. I was mixing those guys up. The thing with Georgia to me, Aaron, is that they just can't seem to close out a game. And their bullpen, which was such a source of strength for them last year, the anecdotal evidence I have is that they're just not as good in the pen.
And they've got Dean Weaver back there who's got great numbers and good stuff.
You believe that he could get you through the night? Sorry, Dreamweaver
wow.
reference. Come on.
Did you ever think
of that with Dean Weaver?
You know, it's the first time I've thought of it.
If I could sing, I would belt that a little Dean Weaver, but I won't do it because I can sing, but I'm not going to sing that song. In my own mind, I can sing. Anyway, Georgia's bullpen is where they're struggling, it seems like.
If you look at Sunday, they got a great start from Justin Grimm, and they couldn't hold a lead.
Well, Georgia drops precipitously in our rankings, all the way down to 22. Florida jumps up to 11. We essentially just switched spots with those two teams.
Yeah, you're right.
And the biggest problem is, you know, even if you give Georgia credit, let's say their two wins at midweek against Clemson, you count those as ranked, which we don't. It's ranked at the time. There's no reconstruction go back. That would be really difficult. But they're 4-9 against teams when they were ranked in the top 25. I mean, they really only have the two really good, the really great home series win against Arkansas. That's really their best thing to hang their hat on, is it not?
Yeah, it is.
It's stunning.
They went to Ole Miss. I think they went to Ole Miss, John, and won that series.
I mean, they did go and sweep Arizona, but Arizona's last in the Pac-10. If they're not last, they're near the bottom of the Pac-10. Oregon's down there too. But in total, Georgia's resume doesn't look as good as we thought. And these last two weekends, they're on the Baylor path.
They're not quite Baylor, but they're
on the Baylor path.
And I always thought that their record looked like a little bit inflated because they didn't really play anybody in the first half. I mean, Arizona, like we talked about, is not the Arizona of old. That was their best non-conference series win. They kind of ran up their record against some softer teams in the league in the first half. I mean, you know, I still think Georgia talent-wise is one of the better teams in this league.
I mean,
they still have more pitching, really, than any other team in the SEC.
I don't think there's a doubt, but when we kept matching them up with teams in the conference, the fact they lost a series at Alabama in the first weekend of the conference series, when you kept dropping them down the rankings, it ended up you had to kind of have them behind Alabama.
Yeah.
And Alabama's 21, Georgia 22. It's the college podcast
and
on baseballamerica.com.
I'm sorry, John. I need to correct myself. They won the opener down at Mississippi, and they lost the next two games.
Yeah, so that's their last two series, two straight series losses. Speaking of, I threw out Baylor. Baylor, which 3 weeks ago, Aaron, was a top 10 team and honestly was looking like a regional host and a potential number one overall seed if they finish strong. Now I think Baylor is on the bubble. RPI or no RPI, they're 26-20 and 10-13 in the Big 12. They're seventh in the Big 12, which is not going to get seven teams in. Missouri is on fire. Missouri's won seven straight. Missouri's, if you had to pick a regional team right now, Missouri or Baylor, who would you pick?
Missouri.
I mean,
no question.
Is Baylor in danger of not making the tournament now?
Yeah. Short answer, yes, they're in trouble. I mean, you know, it's.
And they don't play for a while here with their exam break. Talk about a bad time to have an exam break.
Horrible.
Let's back this up. Easy, back it up. So since they beat Missouri 19-0 on April 11th, we're going to call that the zenith of their season.
Yes.
They've split two with UT Arlington, 1-2 Oklahoma State, lost to Sam Houston.
They were only 1-1. I'm sorry, John. They're only 1-1 at Oklahoma State. The third game was canceled.
Sorry. I'm looking at that wrong. Their wins since that April 11th game have won against UT Arlington, one at Oklahoma State, which is even worse than them, one against UT San Antonio, and that's it. They got a lot of losses.
Swept by Oklahoma, swept by Texas, and they close out with, after their exam break, at Nebraska. I mean, that's not going to, you know, that's the good thing is, John, what they need is wins. They don't necessarily need quality wins. They need wins. They need to get back up to 500 in the Big 12. They can do that if they can sweep at a lousy Nebraska team. You know, I mean, who knows if that'll happen or not because they're Baylor. And right now, John, the way this program, their history the last couple of years.
Exactly.
This group of players, this junior class, has been a colossal disappointment. And unless they somehow get this season turned around, sneak into a regional, and make a run to Omaha, they will be a colossal disappointment.
And, you know, part of that is, let's face it, some of that is expectations. And we aren't necessarily the ones who set the expectations. The recruiters around the country and the scouts. And when those players showed up on campus, they were hailed as, oh, this is going to be a great class. And they haven't lived up to our expectations. But you and I didn't see these guys in high school. And if we did, we don't sit there with stopwatches and radar guns, you know, which I think also makes us unique. We listen to what the scouts and the recruiters say. And universally, this class was hailed as, oh, this is a great class. This class is...
The biggest
one to watch, and they haven't gotten it done as a group. I don't think you can peg it on one or two guys.
Nope.
As a group, hitting, pitching, defense, they haven't gotten it done.
The biggest indictment to me is that the last 2 years, this team has been sitting pretty at the midway point and has collapsed 2 years in a row. Clearly, they've got the talent. They are good enough to beat teams. They have beaten some teams early in the year, and they've absolutely collapsed down the stretch. Show some toughness. Show some resilience when things don't go your way. You know, win a game. For God's sakes, win a Sunday game.
Find a way to win. I agree. Find a way to win.
This team just seems to roll over. I couldn't be any more disappointed with this group of players. And I've got a lot of respect for that coaching staff. But, you know, you got to get your guys back on track here.
I don't think there's a better way to put it. They have disappointed as a group for a long time, for 3 years now. And it's amazing. They really built up that 05 College World Series appearance and a really gritty bunch of players. And brought in this great recruiting class, and these guys have not played like those guys played. It's the Baseball America podcast. He's Aaron. I'm John. Elsewhere in the Big 12, I think the big story is K-State. Talk about gritty. Talk about gutty. I don't mean to take away from their talent. I don't mean to take away from their talent, but here's a team. Hey, Kendall Vols is going to be a first-round pick and all this stuff, and he's USA.
Maybe.
Kendall Vols is 3-5. A.J. Morris is the opposite of 3-5. He goes to the post Friday, and run support or not, he wins.
11-0.
That's an ace. I mean, if it weren't for Steven Strasburg, this guy would be the best pitcher in the country based on what he's doing in college.
He even beat Mike Leake.
He did beat Mike
Leake.
Nobody
beats Mike Leake, John.
Except A.J. Morris. And I think sometimes Mike Leake beats himself. But anyway,
not this year.
Not this year. Kansas State is number 10. I mean, that is quite an accomplishment for Brad Hill. I mean, if I were looking for a head coach, I think I might go try to find the Central Missouri coach because it was Dave Van Horn and then it was Brad Hill. And those guys are both pretty good. And I would take my chances on the Central Missouri coach to maybe know how to build a program and know how to – because that's what they've done at Kansas State. Now, that'll be the key, obviously. But if I were a fan of that program or just a Kansas State fan, I would try to revel in this moment of how good they are right now. Not look too far forward and not look back. Enjoy the fact that right now, Kansas State's baseball program and this team is a legitimate Omaha contender.
They are most definitely going to a regional for the first time ever.
That's right. That's amazing.
If
they can
lose the rest of their games, John, they will be in a regional. And that's saying something right there. And you know what else? I don't know that this is an Omaha team. I don't think it's an Omaha team.
I don't know that it is either.
They've had a wonderful, magical, remarkable season, the best season in program history. I don't think it's an Omaha team. But like you said,
tell me why.
Absolutely right. Because they're not deep enough on the mound. Their bullpen is a major question mark. They don't have an ace back there in the pen just as a stopper. I mean, you know, James Allen has been the guy who's kind of emerged down the stretch. I mean, early on they were kind of shuffling guys in and out, but I don't think it's a dominant group of arms back there. I do like the grittiness, the toughness, the speed. They manufacture their own offense, but it's not an overly talented group. I mean, I think it's a good, solid team that eventually in a regional with other good, solid teams will probably get its, you know, who knows? Who knows what will happen? But I wouldn't pick them to win a regional right now.
I think you have to know that if they can win a regional, a super regional is very winnable for them.
That's true.
Because of A.J. Morris. At some point, you figure the guy's going to lose a game, but he hasn't gotten to that point yet. And they're grinding through a very tough league. A league that's a little bit disappointing, but a tough league.
And how about Kansas, John? Speaking of
yeah, that's the next
to
team.
Me, Kansas and Kansas State are the two biggest surprises in the nation this year.
I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, I think Kansas State's the biggest surprise because Kansas won the Big 12 tournament a couple of years ago. What was it, 2006?
But they had even less expectations, I think, this year than Kansas State.
They did, but the fact that Kansas State has never been to a regional,
right,
that just blows you away. I mean, Kansas even went to Omaha. Generations ago, basically, in 1993. I mean, two coaching staffs ago and this and that and the other. But, Kansas is back in the rankings this weekend at number 23 after their week. I even forget who they beat. I'm
Oklahoma
so impressed
State.
With Kansas State. Oklahoma State, stick a fork in the Cowboys. Now, I know their pseudo-RPI on Boyd's World, which is pretty close to the real RPI, is 24, and Baylor's is 20. But I just don't see how these teams are regional teams. What do they have to hang their hat on?
Oklahoma State has nothing to hang their hat on. They're about 1-5 in conference play, 1-5 and 1 in conference series. That is unbelievable with the
really
talent they've got on their team. I mean, boy, that's
collective
talk about a disappointment.
You really have to wonder, and if I were Frank Anderson, and I'm not there, and we'll have a feature on Andy Oliver coming up in our draft preview issue, but just how big of a factor was that Andy Oliver investigation? I mean, it came right before regionals last year, really sabotaged that team. Oliver was a question mark coming into this year. This guy, these are 21-year-olds, 20-year-olds. I think you have to say that that's a pretty big factor in their stumble this year, not living up to their talent. The guy was a question mark, and then he's kind of approved to play at the last minute. I mean, everybody's role gets a little scrambled. I don't know how much he was able to practice with the team, those kind of details. I don't know those details, but I just have to think, looking at it from the outside, that was a factor. And then this season. But at some point, that can't be an excuse either. The games are going to be played. And I think Oklahoma State would tell you they expected to be better than 6-13 in the Big 12 at this time. So it's amazing. I think Kansas and Kansas State have filled the void left by teams like Baylor and Oklahoma State that we thought were going to be
right.
The top six in the Big 12. So you have to give those two teams from Kansas all the credit in the world. Another team I think that's earning our respect and our credit, and even though they're doing it against the bottom of their conference, is Florida State, Aaron.
Right.
And basically, ever since they won that series against Clemson, when the Coastal Division, was that the Atlantic Division? In the Atlantic Division of the ACC, we were kind of saying how there was no Atlantic Division team that was really worthy, and they and Clemson were the top two teams, and they beat Clemson 2 out of 3. Since then, they've only lost one series. It was at Miami. And Florida State, they've beat North Carolina at home, and they've done a little TCB against the bottom of the ACC. They're completely taking care of business. What is this just the usual Florida State formula here of sinker slider pitchers and a very offensive ball club?
That's it. I mean, their pitching staff is still nothing special. They've got Jeff Parker going on Saturdays. We know who Jeff Parker is. He's nothing special. No offense to Jeff Parker.
Solid average college pitcher.
That's it. And now they've got a freshman in Brian Bush going on Fridays.
Replacing the other freshman, Sean Gilmartin.
Sure.
Who came
out of the bullpen on Sunday, so at least we know he's not seriously hurt. But, I think this team's short on the mound. to make a deep run this year. They were short on the mound last year, but they were better on the mound last year than they are this year.
And they were better offensively last year. They were so much better offensively. They had Buster what it is right now. So
I mean, give Florida State credit. They have taken care of business against the bad teams in this league, and they've got two really good series wins against Clemson and North Carolina. They're going to win the Atlantic Division. They might have the best overall record in the ACC. Probably going to host a regional.
And this team has been to Omaha before with similar teams. You know, Mike Martin, he won't win it. Not with this team. It would be ironic if he did.
Yeah.
I think Florida State's always a factor to go to Omaha. They didn't go there most of this decade. Last year is the first time since 2000. But Mike Martin's been there more than any other coach who has not won it. So when 11's in the dugout making the slow walk, I believe he's even had arthroscopic knee surgery this year. I think I heard that.
Is that right?
So the walk is even slower than usual this year for 11. But you got to tip your cap to that guy. Let's try to wrap up the podcast with some rapid-fire podcast@baseballamerica.com. Email questions. You can send those in to us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. They come into my email box. Of course, if you want to follow us, I think you can even ask us questions at our Twitter page at twitter.com/baseballamerica. But I digress. If you want to follow us,
don't get me started on the Twitter, Jim.
I got about 1,000 followers there, and I got to respect the Twitter. Yeah,
wow,
I got to respect the Twitter.
Right.
Bo McDaniel asked us two questions. So thank you, Bo. Huge fan of the podcast. He listens every week, so we definitely thank him for that. Wondering what you thought of Dallas Baptist's chances of getting a regional bid as it did last year. Are the Texas A&M and Texas Tech series must wins? And what's the draft stock of Victor Black and Austin Knight on the team? Both for Jim Callis on the podcast we recorded on Friday. I think that's up. Not sure if that's up at baseballamerica.com yet. Victor Black is in that first three rounds mix. First of all, I don't know Austin Knight. I have to ask Jim for Austin Knight. He does Texas for us.
He's a good player. I don't know about his draft stock either.
But Dallas Baptist did just lose 2-3 at A&M this weekend, Aaron. And they've got an RPI that's in the mix. But, boy, it's really hard looking at their resume to see them as a regional team.
They don't have any quality series wins. I mean, and you know, hey.
Is Binghamton going to win the America East? Probably not.
They're in the mix.
So maybe that might be their best series win.
And it's Binghamton.
That's not. I mean,
it's come on.
That tells you all you need
exactly.
to know.
Exactly. I mean, I just don't see it. I know that the RPI is good. If they run the table, you know, with a good RPI, the committee has shown that they will put good RPI teams with gaudy overall records into a regional, even if they don't have any quality wins. It drives me crazy, but they will do it. So maybe they got a chance.
They'll put a little more on those midweek wins than they probably should, the committee, I would say.
And they only have one really good midweek win, and that's at Baylor, which doesn't look that good now.
Correct. I mean, sweeping Utah Valley and Northern Colorado and Northeastern, actually losing the series of Northeastern. Beating Houston Baptist. These things should not be the resume of a – you know, last year they went to San Francisco and won 2-3 late, and that really put them over the hump.
They had good series wins last year.
They did. Can going to Jacksonville this year, the final weekend of the season for them, can that be similar? I don't think so.
Only if they run the table. They got to just about run the table here and finish strong. I really think they needed to win that Texas A&M series to get in. I think they're probably in trouble.
I agree. So I guess, Bo, what we're saying is no, we don't think they're going to get in. Bo's other question was about Aaron Miller and Baylor. And Aaron Miller was keeping his stock up, but Aaron, he went stock down this weekend again, wouldn't you say? I mean, his feel for pitch is the question there, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's gotten knocked around two straight weeks now. Look, before that, like, he was a guy who could go maybe even in the back of the first round. I mean, a lefty who's 90-95, and he's shown good feel for his secondary stuff. I mean, the ingredients are there.
I think he suffers in comparison to other left-handers this year, because let's face it, in other years, maybe he'd stand out, but there are a lot of lefties this year. Just in the Southeast, in my region, you got James Paxton at Kentucky, who's not in my region technically, but he keeps coming up. Rex Brothers. You got Brian Domo-Morigato at Tennessee, who's in the bullpen now, but is blowing 94, 97, touching an 8. You got Nick Hernandez at Tennessee, who's a pitchability guy. He doesn't have great numbers this year, but scouts do like him. I'm missing another left-hander, but there's an obvious left-hander I'm throwing. Mike Minor. Hello.
He's all right.
Mike Minor's all right at Vanderbilt.
Heck, so John, even in the Northeast this year, that's the strength of the Northeast is left-handed pitching with guys like James Jones and Mike Belfiore.
Don't forget Clemson. You got Chris Dwyer, the true freshman who's 21 and draft eligible.
Right.
So you got left-handed pitching around the country this year. So Aaron Miller doesn't stand out as much. I think college left-handed pitching is one of the strengths of this draft. So more of a raw guy. I mean, Brooks Raley in his own state's better. I take Brooks Raley.
No question. So I mean, you know, maybe Aaron Miller's got a chance to be drafted as a position guy. I still think he's got too much upside as a hitter. I mean, as a pitcher, excuse me. I mean, he could probably be a top 5 to 7 rounds pick as a hitter too.
But this guy's one of the reasons why we thought Baylor would be the Heat over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And he gets thrown into that group of those juniors who have not gotten it done at Baylor. Then Kelly Barnes also emailed us from Fort Worth. Actually, this is Nick, but his email address says Kelly Barnes. So, way to go, Nick. Get a. Isn't there like a NickBarnes7@gmail.com that's available? Come on, Nick. Give the program here. Guys, how do you – but he's from Fort Worth, so he's asking about the Horned Frogs. Guys, how do you both feel TCU's chances are of hosting a regional in Fort Worth after winning the weekend series against BYU? Great RPIs, you both know. What do they need to do, in your opinion, to have the first ever regional at Fort Worth? Thanks. Love the podcast. We love guys who say love the podcast. Let me tell you that.
You know, I really like their chances. You know, even a week or two ago, you'd think that winning that series against BYU would have been a big boost. But the thing that concerns me is they lost a game that they really needed to win against Texas A&M in the midweek. And their record now against Big 12 teams, John, is 1-6.
Yeah, no, it's not
And so
good.
If you're comparing TCU with like a Texas A&M, when you're looking at a host position, who's going to get the nod there? If Texas A&M finishes first or second in the Big 12, I mean...
But could you get Texas A&M and TCU as your three hosts in the state?
Well, you got Rice too.
Oh, I forgot about those
guys.
I
don't think they're going to get four in that state, and especially when you've got Oklahoma probably still going to host. That's five in those, in that region.
I guess that's the question: who hosts them or Oklahoma? That's kind of who they're up against.
And I still think it'll probably be Oklahoma. I think my bet right now, I think the safest bet is Texas A&M, Rice, and Oklahoma. I think TCU is squarely in the mix, though.
I think what helps TCU is they're not in the Big 12.
Yeah.
So you have Rice. That's one local joint where you can send a team like a Baylor or an Oklahoma State if they were to get in, or a Missouri or these kind of other Kansas State. You're looking for somewhere you got to send them with these Big 12 teams that aren't going to host. But, I mean, like, honestly, Kansas State's got Tuntas Ballpark, I think is what it's
called.
They're
right in there, too.
They are in the mix to host. Because you're looking at a new team. Talk about growing the game. Talk about geography. I think you can have Kansas State. You can have Minnesota. You can bring your Missouri Valley Conference champion there. There you go. Because Arkansas also is in the same geographic mix.
Right.
So all these teams are contending with each other. So some of it's what have you done for me lately, but some of it's against each other. And like you said, TCU against the Big 12, that resume hurts. I think you nail it with that, in my opinion. The fact that the Mountain West Conference is a good, strong league, especially by its standards, I think that really helps. This is BYU kind of had to win that series. I think BYU, despite a good RPI, is going to be on the outside looking in.
You know, it's interesting because I thought this league had a pretty good chance to get three bids. Right now, it might only get two because New Mexico lost must-win series against UNLV. Their RPI isn't good enough. I think New Mexico's in trouble. BYU needed to win at least one game at TCU. I think they're in trouble.
The last couple weeks have not been kind to the Mountain West.
San Diego State looks like they're probably back into the mix here.
I think they are, and they have enough quality. They've got some wins in the West that look pretty good, like beating out Long Beach State a couple times, these kind of things. And they'll get San Diego State in. But thanks for the questions, guys. Definitely, first of all, it's great to have new email questions at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We really like to see that. No offense to Joe Lacates, but we're glad to have, or Luke Goode, but we're glad to have some different emails. So Bo and Nick, a.k.a. Kelly, thanks a lot for the emails. But thanks for joining us here on the Baseball America College Podcast. For Aaron, I'm John. We'll see you next week. So long, everybody.